Today on Straight Talk Africa, top priorities for the African continent in 2015, challenges to democracy, recovery from the Ebola epidemic, and the ever-present security, economic, and human development needs. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, January 14th. I am Shaka Salih.
And hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss and analyze Foresight Africa 2015, a series of briefs by experts at the Brookings Institution's Africa Growth Initiative.
It's a new year that comes with high hopes, but also many challenges. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on what you think should constitute the top priorities in Africa this year. So hope you'll stay with us.
But first, elections, security concerns, and the Ebola crisis. Africa has her hands full as the continent marches into 2015. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more on the story.
In this year's Foresight Africa report, scholars at the Brookings Institution examined the top issues facing Africa in 2015. The elections in Nigeria, the continent's most populous country and strongest economy, and in at least 12 other countries, suggest major leadership and governance challenges, change, and possibly turmoil. Mwangi Kameni is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Nigeria is a big one. It's the big election that is coming up. But if you look at what's going on, there's still a big spread between the North and South. So what we have is a move in terms of democracy, in terms of elections, but divisions seem to still increase. And that's happening in many parts of Africa. So it's, in a way, it's worrisome.
Multiple elections create conditions for electoral violence and hurdles on the continent's established democratic path. The study finds that civil violence has decreased, but security challenges are still prevalent.
If you think about conflict, they are fewer and actually in shorter duration. However, if you think about terrorism, this is becoming to be a very serious issue. And so the security issue that Africa is facing now is quite different from security issues it used to face before, when you had the like civil wars. So think about Al-Shabaab, but more importantly, think about Boko Haram. This is a big problem. And I don't think the world has covered this problem as we would have liked to see.
Often critical of leadership at the African Union, Mr. Kameni says a long-talked-about African Union standby military force may finally become reality in 2015. The Foresight Africa report praises the Obama administration for the African Leaders Summit held last August in Washington, the Power Africa Initiative, and America's assistance with the Ebola epidemic.
Africa is doing better, but we're not there yet.
Amadou Sy, a senior fellow at Brookings, says more help is needed.
The relative share of aid is going down, has gone down, and the relative share of private sector money has gone up, and the relative share of remittances from non-resident Africans living abroad is also going up. But these aggregate figures mask disparities because some countries are still very dependent on aid. For example, the fragile countries, and you've seen with the example of Ebola, the Ebola crisis, that aid is still needed in some particular cases. But I think there is a rethinking of the role of aid and to see how aid can be used as a catalyst to help bring more private sector money, for example, in the Power Africa initiative.
The report also says that achieving sustainable development requires more funding and better use of those funds by Africa's leaders in 2015 and beyond. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now joining us in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Dr. Mwangi Kameni, Senior Fellow of the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution, one of the world's highly respected think tanks based here
in Washington, D.C. He also serves as an advisory board member of the School of Economics at the University of Nairobi. I have to say, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have another opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We appreciate it also.
And I have to, again, frankly, apologize from my deepest, bitter part of my Kavale heart and soul for not having been in the loop, not knowing, frankly, that you were very sick.
I was unwell for some time, but I'm back.
I'm glad that you're doing much better.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
I also understand that not only have you, of course, completed the year, but you also scooped a major award.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. I was awarded the Global Peace Award for scholarship by Global Peace Foundation.
Terrific. Yeah. Terrific. Yeah. We also expect to be joined very, very, very shortly by Whitney Schneiderman, a non-resident fellow with the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution as well, the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under the Clinton administration. Whitney also serves as a member of the Trade Advisory Committee on Africa in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Professor Kimenyi. In the piece that we just watched, among other things, you talk about how the upcoming election in Nigeria is a very, very big one.
Nigeria is actually a key country in Africa. Its population, economy, is the largest economy now. And whatever happens in Nigeria actually will influence what happens in West Africa and, in fact, in Africa. And what's happening now is that this election is creating serious divisions amidst the chaos of Boko Haram. Mm-hmm. So right now, Nigeria is in a very bad state, and I don't think the elections are going to help much because of the North-South divide.
You are an economist, obviously, and therefore you probably must have your fingers on the accurate percentage or statistic. Is it true that one out of every four Africans may in fact be a Nigerian?
You know, they have over 200 million people. If you look at the other countries, you know, they are relatively small. And they are Nigerians. They are all over the continent and all over the world. So Nigeria, in terms of population, is huge, but also in other dimensions.
Well, Whitney, of course, it's a pleasure to have you again on Straight Talk Africa.
Shaka, I apologize for delaying being here. It's an honor to be on your show every time and just appreciate everything that you do to get the voice out across the continent about important issues.
You're so kind. Today, of course, it has not been, in terms of the weather, frankly, it has not been environmentally friendly. So you're excused.
I'm not going to make any excuses. Just please accept my apologies.
You know, it's a pleasure because, again, I had been talking with Professor Kimenyi here. He was asking me whether, in fact, I know you. And I said, wait a minute. This is a man that at one time we used to breathe the same air in the city of the angels, Los Angeles.
We did indeed.
Yes. You're most welcome. What about you? I realize that, at least in terms of your chapter in the report, you focused on President Obama's possible legacy as far as Africa is concerned.
That's correct. So I think the Obama administration, after a slow start, has hit its stride on the continent. I think the four major initiatives, Power Africa, Trade Africa, the Young Africa Leaders Initiative, mm-hmm. and Feed the Future, are very important initiatives for a lot of reasons. One, they will touch many people. They will help to improve conditions in a number of areas. But they also have the private sector sort of woven in mm-hmm. to the core. And that's important because we're getting away from the traditional relationship that the U.S. has had in Africa of donor-recipient to much more of a partnership-based model. So between the impact and the model, I think they're moving in the right direction. But there's still much to do. You know, the African Growth and Opportunity Act expires in September of this year. That needs to be extended right away. My friend and colleague Mwangi talked about Nigeria. That's a very important issue. I think the whole security relationship with Africa is quite important. So there are a number of issues yet to be addressed. I think the administration is trending positive, but the story's not over.
There is, of course, a saying that when you look at Nigeria, it really ought to make good in the sense that if it can get it right, it's quite possible that not only, in fact, will the sub-region of West Africa fall into place, but that perhaps it could, in fact, influence the entire continent just in the same way that its own Nollywood is doing right now. You agree with that?
Well, in many respects, Nigeria is getting it right. If you look at the reforms in the energy sector, if you look at the pace of privatization, if you look at what's happening in the agricultural sector, the e-wallets and the availability of fertilizer and payments, there's a lot of innovation going on in addition to Nollywood. But still, there is the security situation in the north, and that needs to be addressed. And Nigeria needs a partnership, not only with its neighbors, but with its friends in the international community. And I would like to see the United States at the forefront of that partnership. Unfortunately, that's not the case right now.
Mwangi, there are a lot of critics who have been saying that since independence back in 1960, Nigeria probably has come close to having a free, fair, and credible election in June 1993. And that is an election, by the way, that was annulled by General Ibrahim Babangida. An election that should have been won by multi-billionaire Mashood Abiora.
Abiora, Chief Abiora.
Do you have any confidence, any reason to believe that this time around, this election is in fact going to meet that standard of 1993?
One can hope that there is an improvement, but you know the power of incumbency, when used like it's being used in Nigeria, it becomes very difficult for the opposition to actually win. And in this case, I think the president is mobilizing quite a bit of the resources, and I would say that. And what we have recommended is really having institutions for monitoring these elections to be sure that at least, you know, they are fair. But it's very difficult to say that they will be the fairest, but it's difficult.
You're definitely correct in saying that, you know, being an incumbent has a lot of advantages. But what about the fact that when you look on the ground, you look at the issues really, the man has not done well in terms of Boko Haram.
So
the Naira has actually been significantly devalued. Unemployment is among the youth is simply too much. What message does he have, frankly, to demand to?
See, I agree with my colleague Whitney in terms of economic reforms. I think there's one trajectory where economic reforms are moving at a fast pace. But institutional reforms are not moving. So you have this north-south divide that continues to actually, this time is increasing, and you have these terrorist issues that are actually quite, as Whitney has emphasized, they are quite serious. And there are other issues that we are not talking about. The Delta area is still problematic. So in terms of institutions, much has to be done in Nigeria.
The divide even goes further beyond north-south, really, because I have seen where the Yorubas are complaining that they have been actually marginalized. Good luck Johnson, who, of course, there are some people, in fact, who are now saying, in fact, he might very well be bad luck Johnson. They say he surrounds himself with the Ijo, his community.
No, there are a lot of divisions. Again, you know, as I said, the Delta is not happy because they are still marginalized, you know. So there is a lot to be done in Nigeria. But I agree, if Nigeria moves, West Africa will move and Africa will move. So we need to invest a lot in terms of reforms there.
Well, before we pause for a short break, I would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website, Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka That is VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa 2015. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at the top priorities for the continent in 2015, according to the Brookings Institution. The 2015 presidential elections in Nigeria will review the issues and explain the complexities of the 2015 presidential election in Nigeria. The Sixth Forum on China-Africa Cooperation will discuss the evolving China-Africa relationship, whether China's priorities might be shifting. How the West can do more militarily in Africa will argue that violence across the continent is decreasing, and the root causes of terrorism and intra-country conflicts extend beyond extremism. Africa looks forward to the post-2015 development agenda. We'll explain the three prongs of the post-2015 developmental agenda: job creation, infrastructure and governance, and peace and security. 2015, a crucial year for financing development in Africa, will identify ways donors, governments, and the private sector can successfully leverage foreign direct investment for long-term growth.
Sia Nyama Kuroma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Kuroma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come back to you, Whitney. And we'll just go back to President Obama's possible legacy as far as Africa is concerned. What about people, frankly, who say, look, this is a man who went back in 2009 to the Ghanaian capital of Accra and talked to the entire continent how Africa does not need strong men. Africa needs strong institutions. And they say, frankly, apart from talking the talk, he has not been able to walk the talk.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. I think when he did go to Ghana in 2009, 6 months into his presidency, there was expectations that he'd go there another 6 months and a 6 months after that. And that clearly wasn't realistic. You know, we had this tremendous economic crisis in the U.S. at the time. He was committed to extracting the U.S. from Iraq and Afghanistan. He had to get reelected, and, you know, his opponents wanted to portray him as president of Africa, not as the United States. So there were a number of constraints. But once he got to the end of the first term, it really mattered to him that Africa became a legacy. And he did initiate Feed the Future in 2009 at his first G8 meeting. And when he hosted it here in the United States 2 years later, he expanded it and brought the private sector in to it. But it was really his trip to Africa in 2013 where he launched Power Africa. He launched the Young Africa Leaders Initiative. He launched Trade Africa. He made the commitment for a seamless extension of AGOA. And he's been working hard at that. And then, of course, there was a tremendous, the first ever African Leaders Summit in Washington in August of last year, which I think exceeded everybody's expectations in terms of its authenticity, in terms of its impact. So, you know, people compare Obama with Bush, you know, and George Bush, you know, did a very important job in sort of getting PEPFAR and responding to a very immediate need in Africa. But as significant as that was, and as important a legacy as that is, it's not the whole story. Africa's, you know, there are many more issues. Africa's more than just HIV/AIDS. And I think Obama's trying to take a holistic approach to the continent.
Would it be fair to say that perhaps in as far as Africa and as far as building institution is concerned, President Obama has probably been able to look very far in the sense that he introduced YALI, which is now, of course, the Mandela Washington Fellowship?
Right, right. I mean, it was quite extraordinary when the administration put the application online last year for the 500 fellowships, and 50,000 young Africans between 25 and 35 responded. And I think nobody anticipated that kind of response. And I think that was quite reaffirming for the United States to show that still much of what's going on here is still very relevant in Africa. So it's really about building on that. A number of companies have come into the equation, like Microsoft and IBM and Procter & Gamble and Boeing. And, you know, there's a real partnership between doing business, between investing in Africa and investing in young Africans to help them achieve their full potential.
And, of course, they are the future.
They're told that it's all about the future.
Now, what about my friend Mwangi? You obviously wrote on the African Union. And you talked about, you know, perhaps you need a new reformed institution, frankly, that would be in a position to reflect the needs, really, of the emerging continent.
So, yeah. So if you think about, we have all these African countries. They are small, some are large, but economically they are basically small countries. To have a global voice, for example, you need a well-organized institution. And the African Union is entrusted with that. Beyond that, you have now we don't think so much of just individual countries' economic policies. We are thinking about integration within the continent. And this is where the African Union is supposed to take a lead and make sure that we achieve the goals of regional integration. But crucially, and this is actually probably where I've been more critical, is on the areas of security. If you think about what happened just the last year, take South Sudan, take Central African Republic, there have been others in West Africa, like Burkina Faso and so on, but think about Central African Republic. I mean, that's been a chaotic situation, and you had to get the French to come and try and to deal with the situation all the way from France.
You could probably even talk about Mali for that.
And Mali and so on. To me, thinking about independence and thinking about what Africans really wanted to be independent, I find this to be a really, really shameful type of situation. And the EU can do it. Need to be more organized. You need to get investment in military. And what we've been talking about for a long time, about a standing force. But the other issue is the decision-making process. At the head level, as you know, from OAU times, it's a rotating thing.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't matter. If you are a dictator, you can still be the head of AU, you know.
Should that surprise you, really? I mean, given that more than three-quarters, frankly, of the 54 member nations of the AU, frankly, one would describe them that are suffering from democracy deficit.
Yes, many of them are, you know, going backwards. But I'm just saying, if you had an Idi Amin as the head of AU, who is going to respect that organization internationally?
And he was, of course, back in 1975.
He was. I mean, Bokassa, everybody used to be. So, and then they strengthened the secretariat. And I talk about reforming the organization, from the leadership, from the commission, but also in terms of financing. AU is dependent on funding from other places.
Look at the headquarters itself,
it's Chinese,
in Addis Ababa.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can make independent decisions when you are so dependent on funding.
But do these member countries frankly believe in that institution? And if they believe in it, do they frankly wish it to be effective? Because most of them, the last time I checked, don't even pay their dues.
That's a weakness. I mean, if they consider that they are getting the benefits, they should be paying, then that's why I'm saying there need to be really an agreement. You need the EU, but you have to finance it.
So in that context, don't you perhaps think that your criticisms really, in as far as the institutions are concerned, are probably fundamentally unfair? Because let's face it, you are in Addis Ababa. These are appointed civil servants, frankly. Power is not in Addis Ababa. Power is in the member states.
Yeah, I criticize the I don't criticize the commission. I want it strengthened. So I'm saying they need to be empowered so that they can make decisions and make them decisions quickly, like when it's interfering or intervening in a particular crisis. Think about the Ebola crisis. We are missing in action. You had to wait for United States to take the lead and so on, but it's nothing from AU. So in that sense, that's why I'm saying, leader, there need to be a process where the AU is proactive and is taking the lead in this type of crisis.
Is it possible that at some point, perhaps the membership countries can actually allow it perhaps to exercise sovereign powers, sovereign kind-like status?
Of AU?
Yes.
Yes, that's the idea, is that AU can make some decisions independent of the countries, but agreed upon, so that AU can take actual decisions.
But how can it do it when, in fact, the individual leaders on the continent, some might, in fact, refer to them as rulers, frankly don't see that as in their best of interest?
So that's the problem, so that there need to be a lot of reforms with the whole organization, including a clear understanding of where the institution is going for it to be effective.
What about, the fact that there are other international organizations, frankly, which they can look at and probably begin to borrow some things that can also work for our own continent?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I think they know what is right to do. But you see, for example, some of the principles of AU is to enforce democratic values. Now, if you get a leader who is actually not in the same mood, you know, they are not going to push for that. So the thing is, there is a lot of... it's really not a harmonious type of institution, although we think of it as a harmonious institution, but I think the problems are at the country levels.
They will, of course, not allow you, if you shoot your way into power, these days at least.
At least they will intervene. They did that. They threatened to do that in Burkina Faso.
But you can be allowed to rig elections.
So we talk about that too, about the more effective monitoring of elections and so on.
I see. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media, talking about what they think should be the top priorities on Africa's agenda this year. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Robin Ulukaye from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania writes, Africa needs to eradicate all terror groups from the continent, including Nigeria's Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Reforms to prevent government corruption are paramount. Democracy needs to be fully practiced across Africa. Most of all, strong measures need to be applied to fight the Ebola nightmare. 2015 is going to be a prosperous year for Africa. Let's keep our hopes alive.
Dr. Martin Luther King was the essential element in the transformation of the country.
He tried to help African Americans, and it was something that changed our world.
It was something that I grew up knowing.
The words and leadership of Dr. King inspired me. We were fortunate to have one just when we needed it.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The Brookings Africa Growth Initiative experts with us today and their colleagues have identified the key issues for the continent in 2015. Their expertise on these pressing needs is being communicated to national governments, regional organizations, multilateral institutions, and civil society. The goal is to create a peaceful and prosperous 2015 for Africa, given all the challenges that lie ahead. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks our audience, What should be Africa's top priorities in 2015? Well, thanks for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. Let's begin right away with a comment from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan, Emmanu Dorwell, from Tororo in Uganda, who writes, Africa's top priorities for 2015 should be economic empowerment for communities and to focus on achieving the failed Millennium Development Goals that were to be achieved by 2015. Youth employment, industrialization, and good governance should be other key areas of focus. Another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOAAfrica2015. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's check out some tweets, beginning with Collins Epson, who writes, the top priorities for Africa are unemployment, the Ebola crisis, economic development, security, and agriculture. He also writes, how can countries like Nigeria, South Sudan, and Chad able to face basic facts related to security like the Boko Haram issue? Like Boko Haram, I guess. Well, Shaka, lots of questions and suggestions here. What do you make of these comments?
Thank you very much, Whitney. It looks like some of these guys may, in fact, have been writing your report. Yeah. You?
We appreciate that. Gets us off the hook. Yeah, no, one of the themes that came through all those comments just was, you know, two themes struck me, one economic development and the other security. And I think on the economic development side, that's one of the reasons we're paying so much attention to the extension of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, mm-hmm. because that's really the cornerstone of the U.S.-African economic commercial relationship. And that not only lets African companies export to the U.S., duty-free, quota-free, but it encourages more U.S. investment into the African market. And that's critical because U.S. companies, when they come, they don't come with their own people. They come to train. They come to employ. They come to transfer technologies. They come to work in local markets as well as global markets. Mm. And that is a critical aspect of the whole economic development and economic integration. So I salute those questions, and I think they're fingers right on the pulse.
Thank you very much. Mariama, please share some more feedback with our audience.
Well, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Kemi Oloidi from Nigeria, who writes, in my opinion, I think security and basic infrastructure should be Africa's top priorities. Look at Asia, for example. They've reached new heights because they have been able to manage these two core priorities. And while we're at it, let's take a look at another one, this time from Facebook, and from Eric Manchunian of Kigali in Rwanda, who says, Africa needs to end all terrorism, fight ignorance, and tackle the Ebola problem. Shaka and guest.
Interesting. Mwangi, what about that?
Well, I would say that first it tells us that the issues we picked were actually quite relevant because that's what the callers are actually focusing on. I have to say that one of the problems we have in selecting these priorities is that we have limited space in terms of printing. And last year, we covered a lot of economic issues, the youth employment issues, agriculture, and so on. So it's not possible to cover all the issues. But we think that the coverage this year, particularly on issues of security, is quite relevant. If you think about the African rising story, which we've been really talking about, that Africa is rising, you know, we are really sort of heading to a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about what's happening in Nigeria now and think about Al-Shabaab in East Africa, think about Central African Republic, then you realize this Africa rising story has a lot of holes because there are neighborhood effects. What's happening in Nigeria is going to affect the other parts. When you have Ebola in Liberia, Sierra Leone is going to affect many other parts. So I think these are quite serious issues that we have to handle, and we should be able not to deal with them just now, but to have strategies to deal with them in the future. So Ebola, the issue of security, of terrorism, but also the internal problems we have seen, whether it's Gambia, whether it's Burkina Faso, whether it's Central African Republic, whether it's South Sudan, all those are real concern. And you can't do much in terms of economic development without an atmosphere where people can actually do business.
Look at Boko Haram and its stronghold pretty much on the northeastern part of Nigeria. Yeah. In fact, there are people who have suggested that the area under their control as we talk is pretty much like as big as the kingdom of Belgium.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Then
you're supposed to have elections
on
February 15th.
Yeah.
What happens in that particular area?
It's really a serious issue. We, the Brookings Institutions, our African Growth Initiative, we had a project where we were evaluating the impact of terrorism in Nigeria. And basically we were focusing on what strategy do you use for agriculture? Because you still have to feed people, you have this large country.
Mm.
And you think about Borno State, for example. It's a huge state. And Boko Haram has taken quite a bit of that state and many others. So that's why, as Whitney had said, this is a Nigerian problem, but it's beyond Nigeria. It is an African problem, it's a West African problem, and it's an international problem. So it needs more, a broader approach.
We'll come back to that later because, unfortunately, right now, time is not our best ally. Okay. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Shaka, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we honor the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King with a look at the quest for human rights, justice, and dignity in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the world. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. Today we are discussing and analyzing Foresight Africa 2015, a series of briefs by experts at the Brookings Institution's Africa Growth Initiative. Our distinguished guests are Dr. Mwangi Kimenyi, Senior Fellow of the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution, one of the world's highly respected think tanks based here in Washington, D.C. He also serves as an advisory board member of the School of Economics at the University of Nairobi. Whitney Schneidman is a non-resident fellow with the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution as well. The former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under the Clinton administration, Whitney also serves as a member of the Trade Advisory Committee on Africa in the office of the U.S. Trade Representative. I have to say, of course, that Mwangi and Whitney, once again, I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's our privilege. It's
a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's our privilege.
You're most welcome, and of course, a Happy New Year once again.
Happy New Year to you too.
Most welcome. I gather that we have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Andrew from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Andrew, can you hear me?
Yes, please. I can hear you, Shaka. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, sir?
Good, good, sir. I have a short comment, Mr. Shaka.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, please.
A short comment, Mr. Shaka, a quick one. Ngugi wa Thiong'o, in his book, Petals of Blood, says one thing that is convincingly true to me, that you cannot have a true political independence when your economy is controlled from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
I want the expert in your studio to comment on two things. One, the effects of international institutions like World Bank, like International Monetary Fund, and their structural and postal changes on African economies, which changes are not usually pro-people. And secondly, politically, if African leaders are in conformity with the interests of the Western empires, they are okay. They are not dictators. They only become dictators when they go against the European interest or American interest. I thank you.
Very interesting. Who do you think should go for that? Whitney, you've been the front line of U.S. foreign policy to Africa.
Yeah, look, so
go for it.
You know, we do live in a world of East, West, North, and South, but we don't live in a Cold War world anymore. And I think that issues of democracy, issues of representative government are not just American issues, mm-hmm. European issues, Asian issues, or African issues. Those are global mm-hmm. issues.
Mm-hmm.
And those are metrics by which we judge all governments. So mm-hmm. I think that's very important to be very clear that nobody is dictating, you know, to any other government. It's really, is the government that's ruling, does it represent the true interests of the people that it purports to represent?
But how do you respond to some critics who will say, wait a minute, you have not really been pushing for elections. Elections, frankly, that are free, fair, and credible. You have allowed, for example, the rhetoric of rulers on the continent saying, we hold, quote-unquote, periodic elections.
Well, I would disagree with that. I mean, number one, as Mwangi pointed out, the AU has a mechanism in place that if a government is not credibly elected, they're not going to be a member. If they take over by force, they're not a member.
Mm.
I think that's, I mean, we saw that in Madagascar.
If it is AK-47.
AK-47.
But okay, not stealing elections.
Right.
Yeah. Not incumbents rigging elections.
Right.
Frankly, not changing constitutions, which they are supposed to, by the way, preserve, defend, and protect.
But if you look at the scope of U.S. relations today, for better or for worse, they are with the best performers, the governments that really are committed to political reform and economic reform. And it's not a linear process. Sometimes governments have success, sometimes they fall back. But I think it's incumbent to keep that standard very clear and keep working toward a more perfect union, democracy.
There are a lot of people, frankly, whether they are from Ethiopia, whether they are from Uganda, whether they are from Cameroon, Rwanda, will not, frankly, agree with you.
We can agree to disagree. You know, and that's half the problem. But really, the challenge is how are we trying to address those democracy deficits? Are we ignoring them? Or are we trying to bring in more training for elections? Are we trying to bring in more social media? Are we trying to bring in more pressure, frankly, on the governments to open up?
Well, we'll have to go for a break, and then when we come back, we can get back to the discussion. A reminder that you're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. Yes, country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
Once again, let's take a quick look at the top priorities for the continent in 2015, according to the Brookings Institution. An African Union for an Emerging Continent, reforms to increase effectiveness, will reflect on the African Union's successes and failures, recommending policy changes to increase its capability and influence in 2015. Fighting Ebola, a strategy for action, will examine the long-term impacts on the ongoing Ebola epidemic and the global reaction. 2015, a pivotal year for President Obama's Africa's legacy, will appraise the White House's current initiatives in and policies toward Africa, calling for strong leadership from the president in order to deepen U.S.-Africa relations in 2015. African elections this year, a snapshot for Côte d'Ivoire, Tanzania, Burkina Faso, and Sudan. That will be an overview of the 2015 elections in those countries, including their history and democratization, and what to expect this year. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we honor the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King with a look at the quest for human rights, justice, and dignity in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the world. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. And let's go back to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone calls. And we do have Omen from South Sudan, the capital, Juba. Good evening, my brother. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. How are you today?
Great.
Your question, please.
My question to Mwangi, I hope I'm pronouncing his name well.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, Mwangi, you look at your country, Kenya. The post-election violence immediately came to an end because the reason is most of the population are educated. So for me, I suggest that the institution should be really be the top priority. 2015 is education. Are you getting me clearly?
Yes.
Yes, I think education is much more important. Now, if you bring in weapons, you check, for example, here in South Sudan, the small arms are in the hands of the civilians. It is very difficult. People are killing themselves sometimes. And it is very difficult. I think it is through education that all these things can be removed. And then the second thing should be in trade and the rule of law, including the human rights.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, what about Manji?
Okay, so there was a question before that focused on some sort of economic domination, the World Bank, IMF, you know, multilateral institutions.
By the Bretton Woods.
Bretton Woods and also the international, maybe the Western world and so on. And I would say that we are moving, that has happened before, but one of the things that we are, and one of the calls that we are seeing about an organization like African Union is that Africa is actually underrepresented when it comes to global governance. When you think about the World Bank, UN, and all those institutions, one of the things that we need to see reforms has to do with the global institutions.
including the UN, the Security Council, and so on. But when it comes to economic issues, particularly between countries, I think we are going more to the issue of mutual gains. And in this particular issue of foresight, we have talked about China, where although many Africans may not consider China as acting like the other countries, they have many issues there. Also,
and they have their own interests.
They have their own interests. All countries have their own interests. So the onus is on our leadership,
exactly,
to lead, make sure that they are getting the right gains. So the problem is not the Westerners or the Chinese or any other people. The problem is with our leadership, and that's where we need to move. And going to connect this question to the next one, the priority as this last call, I think, from Zambia.
No, from South Sudan.
From South Sudan. Mm. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, even looking about South Sudan is a very good starting point. There's nothing we can do unless you build up the institutions. So I agree that you have to do the institutions, and that's a real priority. Education is part of that.
Mm.
But we have seen, unfortunately, we did polls, surveys, and we found that even as people get more educated, they act more tribal. Unfortunately, it is only the very young urban population
exposure
that seem to act different. But education alone does not change a lot of people.
The traditional type of education.
Yes. So I would say that we have to build the institutions, and particularly grassroots institutions.
So you're talking about, frankly, bottom.
Yes.
To top rather than traditional top bottom.
Yeah.
But how do you do it?
Well, I mean, where we actually have seen cases where the more you give more power to the local jurisdictions through decentralization, through devolution.
But who gives the power?
Well, constitutions.
It seems to me that people have to learn to take it.
Yes. And I think we have seen these changes. And I'm talking from Kenya, for example. We've been talking about how the executive has a lot of power for a long time, but now we see this changing, and the power is going to the people at the grassroots. So we see that they are making a lot of decisions. They have power, like you, people like you have a lot of power, media.
What kind of power do I
have? Well, think about the radio, talk radio in Africa these days. You find that a lot of, using this forum, a lot of people are able to communicate. They talk about a policeman who is being bribed somewhere. They talk about a politician who promised something and is not doing it. So I think media is a big part of all this, Ashaka.
In that sense, I think you have a point, in fact, because the younger generation, unlike ours, which depended on the Gutenberg factor, where you had to have the skill to read and write, was very limiting. This one, you have unfettered access.
Yeah.
Let's go to another caller from Tanzania. Hello?
Please.
A caller from Tanzania, please. Graceback, good evening.
Hello?
You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
What? So?
I think...
My name is Grace.
There is a technical problem. Yes. Could you please turn the volume of your television down because we are getting an echo on the line?
Could you please turn the volume of your television down because...
I'm afraid we do have some technical problems. Let me come to you again, Kimenyi. I think you touched on something very important, especially when you talk about how power, frankly, should be... we should be taken to the grassroots. But, of course, who is going to take it there? Unless if, in fact, the people demand it. Because there are a lot of people who are saying about the African Union you are talking about that, in fact, contrary to what you showed in your report, it remains just like it's a precursor. Yeah. The OAU, a talking shop. That, in fact, it remains, frankly, a club of African rulers, not leaders, because, frankly, they are completely out of touch with the reality that their own people live in. For example, a lot of African leaders, when they are sick and their families, they send their families to Europe, to America, to South Africa, because they have no confidence in their own healthcare systems, and they don't do anything about it. So what about the ordinary person?
So if you look at across Africa and see where there have been major constitutional changes that have empowered people at the grassroots, it's been a long struggle, and it's never supported by the people in power. So in most of these cases, and you can think about Kenya, for example, again, this has been a long, long process to get a new constitution.
Right.
It's not perfect, but it has taken quite a bit of time. So I have to, I would say that these have to come from the people themselves, mobilizing people from the grassroots for the constitutional changes.
But what about the issue of people looking at themselves as citizens who have constitutional rights, inalienable rights, in fact, some might even say birthrights, and all their allegiance to the state, as opposed to subjects who do not have rights but have privileges granted to them by the individual rulers who they owe allegiance to, like the kings, emperors, presidential monarchs and stuff like that. How do you tell Kenyans, for example, yes, they have a terrific constitution on paper. They are the primary stakeholders as far as really the issues of governance are concerned. They employ a president, not the other way around. But what about the reality of the situation, in fact, where the people who are elected become the masters and they treat their own people who put them in office as subjects, so modern-day sharecroppers?
I would say that still remains, but there have been a change. I would say, you know, this is changing. The voters, those rural people need to be empowered. And again, as the caller talked about, I wouldn't say education, but more information so that they know how much power they have. And I have seen this, again, happening over time. It takes time, unfortunately, but it's happening. And we see that, you know, there is change happening on the ground.
Whitney, the last time we talked, I remember you were talking about how the U.S., frankly, needs to adopt a sort of policy that is people-centered, not the traditional ones, frankly, of government to government, where things don't reach ordinary people.
Right.
Is that, have you seen that in the play?
I haven't, actually. You know, unfortunately, too much of our policy is still focused on presidents' offices. And it's not enough, for example, on parliaments to strengthen, you know, the representative factor of people. And I don't think we do enough, frankly, in supporting, you know, democratic election training and national election councils and civil society organizations. We try to do it, but I think we need to do much more, whether it's in the area of women or youth or entrepreneur. You know, we really need to get down to the grassroots because that's where change is coming from.
You have 20 seconds. Why don't you do to Africa exactly what you used to do to Eastern Europe during the Cold War? Well, unfortunately, time has not to be
August
alive. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Dr. Mwangi Kimenyi, Senior Fellow of the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution, and Whitney Schneiderman, non-resident fellow with the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution as well. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Pate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive. A happy new year, of course.
Felton from Beyond Category. This is VOA. Follow us online at voanews.com.